You know, Chuck talked about coincidences in Alcoholics Anonymous. He doesn't know it, but we were in the same town in June 2004 celebrating Founders Day. If he's talking about Founders Day, what I'm thinking of, but I don't know. We'll find out after the meeting. But without further ado, I want you to join me in giving a warm AA welcome for Scott A. from Wisconsin.
Hi, everybody. My name is Scott. I'm an alcoholic. And if you can't hear me, my girlfriend said she's going to wave at me because on the way up here, she was talking about my hearing problem. And we were just in a meeting that the acoustics were pretty bad. So if you can't hear, I'll yell at you. So also, it's like a gong show. We're talking about honesty, and there's something's going to go off over there if I stray from that topic. So. Chuck was talking, it was a reminder, Chuck, I'd been in a Victoria, Texas jail in 1964, and it wasn't my fault. I took my last drink on July 28th, 1978. And that's not because of me, that's because of you. I believe that with all my heart. I'm from Waukesha, Wisconsin, small town west of Milwaukee. What's interesting about Milwaukee, of course, and a lot of you know the old country western song about made Milwaukee famous, made a fool out of me, and well, it got a lot of us in this room too, right? And my girlfriend and I were walking just south of the building. Have you seen a brewery behind us here? And we were kidding about it today or last night. You know, they realized they weren't going to make any money this weekend, so they're selling ice cream. You can see them in there tasting beer, right? I can spot them. You know, I can see behind the curtain there, you know. But it's neater than heck. They got somebody from Toronto. They got one of us. Guarding the door there. And when you walk in, there's a guy standing there going, over there by the ice cream. They got. I'm not kidding. You think I'm kidding? Check it out. You know. Because everybody, you don't know if you want to take off your tag or what when you walk in there, right? What's interesting about Wisconsin, or my kind of drinking, goes with, we had a lot of Germans in Wisconsin, a lot of Scandinavians, Polish folks in our history, and we brag about our beer drinking. We're way down on a list historically per capita beer consumption in Wisconsin, really. We were down about, I don't know, it's embarrassing, you know. But nobody in the world can touch us as far as brandy drinking. That was my beverage of choice. And interesting facts, I don't know how up to date this was, but this wasn't real long ago. People in Wisconsin drank more brandy than all other 49 states combined. They drank more brandy than the country of France. So there's a lot of us in the program up there, and that was that's what got me here. So. And I want to thank Doug Richardson. If anybody sees that guy, I was coming down the elevator, and it just overwhelmed me yesterday. What an incredible job. Everybody that's helped to put this on. This is only my... Anybody sees him, know that man, give him a hug for me because I owe him a little amends. I'll get to that real shortly. But just incredible how many people have helped on this thing and just the whole city. I'm not a big city person. I never have been. I'm kind of a small town guy. I'd move to this city in a heartbeat. I can't wait to tell my daughter. She's a dancer. She's in ballet, and I'm hoping she could get a job here. I'd love to come back. And the people, thank you, Toronto. If you're sitting out there wondering how we get up here, I was sitting there 5 years ago wondering the same thing. How do these people get selected to talk? This is only my second international convention. I've been sober, God willing, the end of this month will be 27 years. But I didn't have the opportunity until, fortunately, we came to Minneapolis, and that's only 5-6 hours away from us. But when they selected Toronto, and then 9/11, and the world has changed on us, of course, and I heard about all these rules, and I'm a typical alcoholic. I get all worked up last year. I'm getting all angry at Canada and the laws, and I'm thinking, how many of my friends aren't going to be able to be here today? We got a few felony friends, you know. We got a few few of us been locked up in jail, and then you got to go through all these hoops. And so I'm worried about my friends, whatever else. I call the embassy out in Washington because I want to get the real scoop. This is about a year ago. And you can know what this is leading up to. I got in an argument with the Australian consul one time, and they didn't let me in down there. I start not arguing with the lady, but she didn't treat me too nice, and so I got to call World Service Office and complain. I'm sniveling. I think after 27 years, I'd be a little healthier than that, but I was out running. My boy got me, I quit drinking, and I tried to get healthy and everything else, and I was out running, and I got to call and complain. So there's Doug Richardson, he answers the phone or whatever, how many ever been at your meeting where the secretary's term is up, or the treasurer, or the cleanup person, and they say, we need, and everybody's looking down, right? It's like our deer out there, and it's going to, head down, and ducking and running, and suddenly your hand goes up because your sponsor was sitting behind you. Your arm goes up and says, thank you, Scott. And that's what Doug Richardson did. And that's the only reason I'm here. I don't like speaking, honestly. I really don't. I'd rather be sitting out there. I'm here because I'm responsible. And you saved my life. And I better be up here. Doug says, after he heard me whine, says, Scott, would you speak in Toronto? And what do you say? I suppose. And I was hoping he forgot about it. And this spring, I was out running. I come in, there's that letter from, I said, this is neat. Is this pre-registration stuff? And what else? No. And I got a report here, And so I said yes, and here I am. When I came out to the East Coast a couple times, it's kind of different. Wisconsin, we don't qualify like you do out on the East Coast line. I think that's kind of neat. I kind of brought it back home where I work. I make the guys I work with. I was in construction for a long time. I still am part-time. I was a cement mason. But I went back to school after I got sober about 3 years and started working in the field of alcoholism and I'm trying to help alcoholics, drug addicts for 24 years now. So I use it at work, the qualifying. And briefly, I don't spend any time on, I belong here sincerely. I picked up my first drink at about 13, between 13 and 14, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I got drunker than heck, sick in a dog, and I loved it like the rest of us. You're off and running. And I drank for the next 19 years. I lost a wife. She left because of my drinking. I lost a job finally. I thought that would never happen. I never missed a day's work. I prided myself on being tough, being a good construction worker. And then I finally got arrested for drunk driving. And things started happening fast. But to sum it up real briefly, in 19 years, what it got me is about the summer of 1978, in that July, I wound up creeping around a house at my cottage out on the lake. 3 in the morning with a loaded 45 automatic, and I was looking for a boogeyman. It wasn't there. It was spooky, and I did get into treatment about a week later. I didn't have any trouble with that second step when I looked up on the wall there, and I still own that gun, and it hasn't hurt anybody. It's locked up where it won't, but by the grace of God, I don't have to hurt anybody. What happened just prior to that, though, is I had a pretty big lawn, and I'd be riding on my big lawn tractor, and that was my little kingdom. Wife is gone. It's a very, very lonely place. Everybody leaves, and you're alone there, and it's because you're drinking. You're struggling with that. And I'd ride around my lawn, and I'd get back to that brandy. I'd have this big cup of Bucky Badger, cup full of brandy and Coke, and I'd take a drink. And I'm looking up, and I was raised. My girlfriend and I got out of a meeting before out of here. We agnostics. And I can identify very much with that group. And what happened was I start praying. And I start crying. And I was asking God's help, get me out of this. Okay, maybe it has something to do with the drinking. And I come around the lawn and I take another big drink. And about 4 hours later, I didn't come home drunk. I crawled home. I was lucky I didn't hurt anybody, kill anybody with my truck. And the next morning, I said something I knew for a long time, is I didn't believe in God. I'm agnostic. I still am, I guess. Pretty much. I don't care about it anymore. It doesn't matter. But I had to get honest with that. It was critical. And what I believe with all my heart is God works with people. I don't know anybody that's ever seen God. But I know a lot of us have felt the hand of God. We're right in here right now. Because through the love of a couple of friends of mine, I was afraid to drive home one time. I stopped at a friend's house at her farm. And she took one look at me in the morning, and I'm shaking. And I went to the refrigerator, got a beer out. And she says, oh, my God, Scott, would you talk to somebody? She said, I got a good friend up at the hospital. This lady was a counselor. And I don't know if my friends Bob and Judith are in here. Did they make it in here? They don't live down in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Anybody gets down that way, look for a lady named Betty P. God bless her. There's a lot of us sober around Milwaukee because of that lady. My good friend Donna took me to talk to this nurse, ex-nurse, and she was a counselor in this drug abuse program. She was the first person in Alcoholics Anonymous I ever talked to. She was sober 15 years. And she convinced me to come in there 4 days later if I could make it. And my friend Donna delivered me in her old little Volkswagen Beetle right to the front door, and I dumped out my last drink out there and some brandy, dumped it on the parking lot. And I got in the treatment program by getting honest with one other human being. I had the pleasure of coming up the elevator and getting in line yesterday, and I ran into my friends here from Las Cruces. They had lived up in Wisconsin. I remember when Judith had to do that 22 years ago or something like that. She was sitting next to the guy that helped her get sober. And she sat in my office 22 years ago. And that feeling of I finally label a problem, we get help, and the most powerful word in the world is the first word in the 12 steps, we. Last night, how can you top last night? Unbelievable. My friend told me how I feel when I got in that room some years ago, and I was grateful to make it 5 years ago. I'm grateful I was there last night, and I hope to be in San Antonio. I'm going to avoid Victoria, Texas. you don't want to follow my lead, though, because I did want to bring one little thing, and I appreciate Chuck picked that out in this morning's reading. I read two books. One book they gave me, that's all there was when a lot of us get sober, a little black book, and it's non-conference approved. But that little book helped save my life because I struggled with this so desperately. I had the first two steps down. I believed in the first two steps, and that's as far as I'm going to get, being agnostic. It took me a long time to develop the concept of God in my hand. A lot of people said, take the group. Well, I'm still doing that. It's here. It was there last night. Every one of these rooms I walk into. But it took me 3 years. I'm not real proud of this. You know, hanging on to those first two steps, trying to get that third step. And I finally moved down to Sarasota, Florida. Anybody here from Sarasota? God bless you, because that's where things happened to me. Braden in Sarasota, Florida. I finally got a sponsor. Sincerely tried to work the steps. I went to a lot of meetings and finally read the big book cover to cover. It took me that long. I didn't like the language of it. It seems, you know, it's a lot of touch and not, you know, in tune. But this dear friend I have, she lives out in California now, and she helped save my neck too, because she, the only thing I disagreed with the speaker last night, I mean, that was incredible, all three of them. Three of the best great speakers I've ever heard. But for me, I don't know about yourself, you don't tell me what to do. When she talked about that, you know, not the suggestions, that doesn't work for me. I don't take confrontation real well. You show me what to do. And that's the sponsor I have today, the first man I met in AA. He came up to the hospital, they talked about service work, and this man came out to the hospital and played his banjo, and I don't like banjo music, and the nurse told me to get out of my room. I was hiding down there isolating, you know, and, you know, how that goes. I said, I'll go down there, but I'm not going to sing. You know, don't ask me to sing. So I met one of the finest men I've ever met in my life. Just a quiet, decent man. He's a carpenter. And I didn't have to sing. And I waited around to talk about construction work afterwards. And then I found his home group. So I'd go sit next to him. And he's my sponsor today. And he didn't tell me what to do ever. He showed me what to do. And that's, I remember when I was in the Army, and the same thing. I would have went to hell for those guys lead me. And they did. And anyway, it took me 3 years to figure this out. It's called How It Works. And all I want to read is that first paragraph, please. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover, people cannot fall on, completely give themselves this simple program using men and women who are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. There are such a fortune on rigorous honesty. And then at the end of it, it says, many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. This lady showed me, he said, dummy, it talks about honesty three times in the first paragraph, and it's not mentioned again. And I kind of tried to hang on to that, and it got me to do the best fourth and fifth that I could at the time, which got me into sixth and seventh. And then I went to a group therapy down in Sarasota, Florida, with a bunch of great guys down there for 8 weeks to do eighth and ninth step. When I read the big book, I didn't realize where those promises were. We didn't talk about them in Wisconsin as much as they did down in Florida. Now you hear, of course, everywhere. But when I finally did volunteer to do a step on eighth and ninth, and And there they were, the promises. If we are painstaking about this part of our development, we'll be amazed. So the honesty that came with talking to another human being that I have a problem, and then what happened is, how many, I don't know, you know, it's all these years I've been sitting around tables, and I asked Dorothy if she'd ever read Chuck C's book, A New Pair of Glasses. Well, I'm just finishing it now, and it's a great old book, and it was written around 1981, and I'd love to have met that man. We talked about alcoholism as a disease of perception, how distorted our thinking. I used to pride myself on what an honest man I was in my dealings in construction work and giving a good day's work. We had a campaign in the union, 8 hours of work for 8 hours of pay. We had, you know, stickers on our helmets and our lunch boxes and 8 for 8, you know, being, you know, real macho about it. And I didn't realize what a hypocrite I was. I wound up, because of my alcoholism, driving drunk hundreds of times. You know, I'm appalled at that today. I'm so grateful I didn't kill anybody. I've got friends that had to do that to get into AA. I lost a wife because of alcoholism, and I wasn't a good son, neighbor, citizen, whatever. And that was my perception. And with help and with your help, not telling me what to do, showing me what to do. That was a program of rigorous honesty and it working in it, and that practice and new habits. And it happened slowly. It didn't happen overnight, of course. And there was progress. And little by little, it opens the door. And you work at more. And, you know, and I'm not done, of course. I've got a long ways to go. A few friends that help me take my inventory. I got a 16-year-old son that does that once in a while. That's when I work in a 10-step mostly. It's amazing. I'm supposed to be a parent and a leader for him and my daughter, but mostly my son now. She's off trying to be a dancer somewhere. But my son, I still get to spend a lot of time with. I love him so much. And, you know, there's times and here I am apologizing to a 16-year-old, you know, and I'm grateful I can do it. It hurts yet, you know, to be human, screw up like that. And yet I have no quarrel with most of my family still are very religious. They thought, you know, are involved in church. And what I'm grateful is AA, those commandments that I was taught, are just a guide to live by. And I live by them today. I got a 91-year-old mother that I take to lunch every Tuesday since my dad died 13 years ago. And that would make him so happy. We're all taking care of her, doing all the things that I want to do to be a good human being, member of our community and our society. So the way that steps have crept into my life and the principles, I was taught a long time ago too that there is no comfortable or long-term enduring sobriety without gratitude. We got a movie at work, and old Father Martin says gratitude is a hinge on which the sober life swings. Well, Chuck read that reading this morning. I read it early this morning too, and it says the essentials, H-O-W, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. H is on the top even. It's on these little coins we carry when we stay sober another year. That's how it works. The honesty is critical. It was the essential part for me, and I got to keep working on that. One of that little black book I read, there's a page in there, January 6th, that I read very often, and it's about discipline. It says, I will discipline myself. And I was undisciplined, and AA has taught me to, you know, that sometimes things I don't like to do, but they're good for our health and they're good for all of us, and it keeps me going. I'd like to end with a little something that I picked up. When I heard that neat man from India last night, I got another twinge from the past. I don't know if that's happened to anybody while I've been here, you know. By the way, how do we know we're going to be honest? It's just as simple. We quit drinking, we get involved, we get a sponsor, we start working staff, we start, you know, working in honesty, and it's amazing how a little thing called a conscience comes back. Voice inside and tells me what's right or wrong. But another flash from the past, when that gentleman was talking, I want to tell you that one of the stupidest things anybody could ever do, I quit drinking. A month later, I'm in my counselor's office in this rehab. I checked into a place for 3 weeks, begged even to get off the last week, you know, I got to go home. And I told my counselor I was going to take a little road test. And he said, where are you going? And I said, well, I got an argument with the consulate in Australia. I was going to go to Australia, run away down there. And I got smart with him and argued with him, and I got a problem with that. You can figure that out. And so they wouldn't let me in Australia. He said, where are you going to go? I said, I'm going to go to Kathmandu. And he looked at me and he said, you're not kidding, are you? I said, no, not. I just went to a Bob Seger's concert, you know. And I'm not kidding him. I had to look on a map to see where it was, right? Those that don't know geography, it's capital Nepal, you know. And so I said, but I tell you what, Bob, I did write to the World Service office, and I got a list of AA meetings. He said, are you kidding me? I said, no, here it is. And it wasn't a published directory like it is today around the world, the way I remembered it. It was, you know, loose leaf papers. And a lady from the World Service office wrote a handwritten note, good luck, Scott, come back sober. I carried that thing with me. I was in Bombay, India, and I didn't go to one meeting. And there was a bunch of them. I got home sober. I didn't do any drugs. And I came home sober, and I got scared, and I went back to meetings. I've never forgot that lady, and I took a trip into New York City in 1985 just intentionally to thank her. I said, pass this on while I made it home. And a man in Munich, Germany, the last thing, please, gave me something I'll never forget. And it was a joke about Americans. We got any German friends in here. The word in German, gift, means poison. Through AA, through that little black book, I conditioned my mind to find out that alcohol, other drugs, alcohol is poison to me. The English translation, gift, the present. That's what I have on every day, and all of us got it today, and thank you for saving my life.
Okay, everybody, if you could now join me in giving a very warm AA welcome to John T. from Quebec.
Hi, everybody. My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
And my main language is French. When I was honored and flattered to give my name to be a speaker, I told them that I could do anything in French or in English, and they decided that I'll do it in English. So that's all right. I'll do my best, and I know that everybody here has patience and tolerance, so thank you. I'll be very fast on my drinking. At the end, there was a revolver under my pillow and a ball of booze beside my bed, and alcohol saved me. I couldn't kill myself. Because I told myself, I can't leave this way. I got to give a note to my ex-wife, my kids, write a note to my secretary, my friends, and I couldn't do it. So I said, we'll wait till tomorrow. And the next day, I phoned one of my friends, which is a psychologist. He came over, and he looked at me, and he said, you need a doctor. So we went to the doctor, and I didn't want to go to AA. I phoned a few psychologists afterwards, and they all told me, what's your problem? I said, alcohol. Well, they said, there's nothing we can do for you. It's AA. When you settle your alcoholism, you can come back and we can work on something else. So I went to AA. Today, I took a few notes. It's not been taken very long ago because that's the hotel paper. Because it's not my language, and I want to, things that I'd like to say that I believe in. Today is the first day of my life, and it is wonderful because of God, not of me. Today will be the first day of the rest of my life, too, and that will go on till the end. Honesty. When I thought, made me think a lot about honesty when they told me that I would speak on it, so I said, for me in French, there's 3A that I can't explain in English, but I found 3 H's in honesty. Plus humility equals happiness. And I'll try to be honest with you, I haven't created anything. Everything that is around and possible been created by God. And He put that at my disposition to do the best I can with the most honesty that I can. Nothing is mine. No rocks, nothing. It started very slowly and we're up here now. And all kinds of communication and everything, but I must never forget that I'm nothing. So if I'm nothing, I can't go any lower. I just can go up a little bit more. I'm not too high. I'm alone. I worth nothing. I worth something if there's somebody, maybe a few million people helped me to get here today with cars and anything. The room, clean, the soap, everything depends on somebody. Alone, I'm nothing. AA showed me that. In the 12 steps, I read that somewhere in a book, that if you're honest in the three first steps, you'll make peace with God. And if you're honest, really honest in the 4, 5, and 6 steps, you'll make peace with yourself. And if you're very honest on the 7, 8, and 9, you'll make peace with the others. And if you keep on being honest in the 10, 11, and 12, you'll maintain that honesty. That makes you live better inside, with serenity and calm. In the literature, it is said that many people on the 4th step weren't honest and they went back drinking. Everything has to come out. Everything. Be honest. Everything. You'll feel a lot better. Another place that I got to be honest in my movements, the way I move. Maybe there are some signs I shouldn't do anymore. Things that I shouldn't do anymore, the way I move. Other things, if I'm honest, the way I talk. Change my language. When I went to New York last year on a trip, I was thinking I'd like to be a speaker there and at the international convention, not the international convention, but the meeting they have over there, and God decided something else. A guy named Rosario from where I live was named, and he gave me a lot more than I could give everybody. He just said, if you don't have something nice, something beautiful, something positive, something right to say, then shut up. Honesty in your mind, that's the hardest part for me. If you talk and move, that shows everybody, but in yourself, your mind. Am I honest with my mind? When I see a beautiful girl or whatever, that can go very far. If you want to be honest, everything you see should be, praise the Lord, it's not, but the mind is the most difficult part for me, to think all the way honestly. They say at page 95 of Bill's reflection that AA is the kindergarten of spirituality. That is one thing that really hit me. If that's the first step for spirituality, I went a little further. I bought books and I talked with people to try to get a little bit more of that spirituality. I learned that everything that goes in me goes in by my senses, my view, my smelling, talking, touching, whatever. And if I want to get a closer contact with God, so to get all those senses out, listen. If you have big music in the background, it's no good. In the traffic. So I try to get very deep, like meditation or whatever. I close my eyes when I go to meetings to really listen what the speaker says. Those are all little things that I can't do perfectly, that's for sure. But at least I learn with the movement and with lectures and everything, things that I never taught before. They talk about honesty in our book, in a way, in French, but Bill's reflection on page 172 and 213, those are pages that touched me more than the others. And with more honesty and humility, more happiness, more serenity, more calm, more love, more understanding. And I'd like to thank, there's two ex-delegates to New York that are here today from my region that gave me the chance to be here today. And like my friend said, when you're out of saying something nice, and shut up. I thank you very much. My name is John, and I'm on alcoholic.
My name is Dorothy, and I am an alcoholic. Let's thank our three speakers again. Now, I was hoping that I would get out of speaking, this afternoon. But it looks like the higher power has decided I should at least share with you briefly my experience, strength, and hope in relation to this topic since we have time left, and that's what the letter that I, the loving invitation I got from New York when it said the chairperson's responsibilities, that's the line in there. It says that the chairperson is to share at the end if there's time left over. And that was the first of all, I had a really good meeting, so it was wonderful to hear all of the speakers in relation to honesty and recovery. And as I said at the beginning, I needed a meeting, and I certainly needed a meeting on this topic. It takes me back to the beginning. When I surrendered to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to my first meeting, where I surrendered September the 25th, 1983, I did not think that this program was going to work for me. I had visited Alcoholics Anonymous a couple of times. The first time was in October of 1981. I was on an assignment. I was getting ready to graduate from therapy. All I had to do was show, and I worked hard in therapy. I went to any lengths not to give up a drink. So I was a prize patient because I knew something was wrong with me. But I didn't think it was alcoholism. I didn't think it was my drinking. I just thought I drank too much, and I had blackouts, and did things that went far from my values because of those other problems in my life, and I wanted to fix those. So I worked hard in therapy. I got so well, my therapist used to take me on tour occasionally. I even went on TV. And the talk show host looked at me and said, "Oh, you look so together." And inside, you know, that was a lie. That was a dishonesty. Because inside, I was already dying from the inside out. And I knew that was the truth, but I didn't know what the problem really was. So I went to this therapist, worked real hard. All I had to do was prove that I could have healthy relationships with the opposite sex. So she sent me to singles bars to meet Prince Charming. I've always taken my assignments in life very seriously. Same way I take my sobriety. So it was October 1981, and I went off to the disco bar. Nobody asked for my phone number. I felt rejected and depressed. It was a long time before I found out that my alcoholism had taken me to a place where I was really unapproachable. But that car hit a parked truck that night, and my best girlfriend was in the car, and she wasn't an alcoholic. She probably saved both of our lives because she shouted, and I hadn't gone into a blackout. I had gone into that pass-out phase. So she shouted loud enough, and I guess hysterically enough, that I came to. And I was coming to just as the car was going into the truck. And we crashed. And her head hit the windshield, and I felt guilty because here I was putting my best friend's life in jeopardy. So to make amends to her and to impress her, I told her I was going to go to an AA meeting. I called Alcoholics Anonymous up on the phone in Philadelphia, the local intergroup where I'm from. A man answered the phone, and I said, "I want to know where there's a meeting for professionals in Alcoholics Anonymous." And I thought he was arguing with me because he said there's no such thing. And I said, "I know there is. I thought he was trying to keep it a secret from me. Because my therapist had said there was a meeting downtown and lawyers went to this meeting. I wasn't a lawyer, but I was a professional. And I was a professional drinker as well." And so I said, "I know there's a meeting, you know, downtown." So he told me where this meeting was. This meeting was called Mustard Seed. Now, I learned that there's a lot of Mustard Seed meetings, but if you're from the Philadelphia area, you know what Mustard Seed is. For those of you that are not, for your benefit, Mustard Seed is a meeting that we have in Philadelphia that demonstrates Yale to jail. It's a great meeting. It meets 6 days a week, rain or shine, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I went to that meeting, had a few drinks in order to fortify myself, picked up my ex-husband, who had been my drinking buddy for a number of years. We sat in the back of the room, patted ourselves on the back, and said, "Gee whiz, aren't we lucky?" And we felt real sorry for you people. And I thought that if I'm not careful, I could end up an alcoholic. So I left that meeting with the resolve that I would stop driving my car at night, and I would stop keeping alcohol in the house, and I would stop drinking with certain kinds of people, and I would definitely lie to you if you asked me how much I drank. And the list went on and on. And of course, I was never able to keep the resolve once I had drink number two. By the time I visited Alcoholics Anonymous for the second time, this time I didn't go with anybody, but I sat in the meeting and I cried. I didn't even know why I was crying, but somehow there was this feeling that I knew I was losing something and I didn't know exactly what I was losing. Today I know I was losing the battle. I was coming to understand that I was powerless over alcohol. And there was a man at that meeting that had gone to graduate school with me. And I said to him after the meeting, what do you do? And he said, well, you go to a lot of meetings, especially step meetings. And I didn't know what that meant. I felt bewildered. I felt baffled. And then, I didn't go to another meeting. And he tried to 12-step me by sending other people to me. And I wasn't ready. I ran into him on the street one day. And he said, Dorothy, why are you so afraid to tell the truth about who you are? Why are you so afraid to let people know who you are? And I didn't understand what he meant when he was talking about that kind of honesty. And it was a miracle that I ended up in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know there's a lot of miracles in this fellowship. I hear about them all the time. I read about them in our international journal, The Grapevine. And I hear these miracle stories at meetings that I've had the privilege to go to. Anyway, on September the 22nd, 1983, I had my last drink, and I didn't know it was going to be my last drink. If I had known it was going to be out of my last drink, I would have had a lot more to drink. Part of me left my body. I had an out-of-the-body experience. I was with a small group of women. They looked up to me. They thought I was strong. I was brave. They were appointed to this little therapy group by that same therapist. I was still in therapy and getting ready to graduate. And I had stayed in therapy, and my therapist bought this act that I had, the fraudulent act that I had, that I was okay. And I knew it was a lie, but I couldn't tell the truth. And these women that night, we were in a restaurant, and the cocktail waitress came over, and she took everybody's order. And at the meeting that night, this not the AA meeting, but the support group meeting, I had shared that I was concerned about abusing alcohol, and those women thought I meant I wanted to stop drinking. I didn't. I wanted to stop wetting my pants. I wanted to stop having one-night stands. I wanted to stop making phone calls in the middle of the night and coming to and not knowing until I got the long-distance phone bill who I had called. I wanted to stop the whispers that had started on my job behind my back. I wanted to stop all those things, but I didn't want to stop drinking. But every one of them ordered a soft drink, a Coca-Cola, and the cocktail waitress got to me. And it was only 8 o'clock at night. The state stores weren't closed. The bars weren't closed. But by this time, my alcoholism had progressed to the point where I couldn't even hold on to this last thing that I wanted, and that was that phony respect that other people had for me, the lie that they bought, because I had to order a drink that night. And I ordered a second drink, and before I finished it, part of me left my body, and I had an out-of-the-body experience. I didn't tell you about that nay for a long time because I thought it was a little weird. But I read somebody else had that same experience in The Grapevine, and then I knew I wasn't so unique. But I had an out-of-the-body experience, and I saw myself, and I had a glass in my hand, and I knew I was drinking not because I wanted to, but because I had to. And that it was a matter of time before the world found out what I was, and I was not going to let that happen. I decided I was going to kill myself. I had a suicide plan, and I wasn't going to tell anybody. The next day was a Friday. I went to work, 9 o'clock in the morning, and I picked up the phone, and I called AA for the third time. Same man answered the phone. This time, I didn't ask him where there was a meeting for professionals. I asked him where there was a step meeting. Didn't know what it was, and he told me where it was that Sunday. And I turned myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since. And where I got sober, they spot you if you're a newcomer. And I went to a lot of meetings because I came here as willing to listen as the dying can be. So there was a woman who gave me a meeting directory, and she said, Dorothy, it suggests that you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I said, yes, ma'am. I said the ma'am inside, but I said the yes out loud. And I started going to those meetings, and they spotted me as a newcomer. I don't know how you could tell, but you knew. And they'd hand the newcomers how it works. And I was so glad that I heard some of that how it works. And every time it got to that part, rarely have we seen a person fail. I knew that it didn't say never, and I was afraid the program wasn't going to work for me. And I heard that thing that you have to be capable of rigorous honesty. And I was afraid that I couldn't get honest. And I heard somebody talking on the steps one day, and it was saying you have to have enough humility to stay sober. And I didn't know what humility was, even though I knew what it meant if I looked in the dictionary. But I couldn't understand. What was this humility thing? And I never forget the answer. They said, Dorothy, if you get honest, humility follows. And I knew that honesty was not about sharing with you the facts of my life, because I could rattle those off. I learned how to do that in therapy. That's what I did when I went on tour. I told you people, the strangers, the story of my life, and they said, oh, thank you for your courage. But what I didn't tell you, what I wasn't capable of telling you, was how I felt. Couldn't tell the truth. Half the time, I couldn't tell the truth to myself. And it was in this program that I learned how to get honest. And I started doing that by not drinking under any and all conditions. Keep coming back, you told me. That's what I did. And share with you what was going on to the best of my ability. So that's enough out of me. We have 20 minutes left. There's a room full of people. But I know some of you, for the 20 minutes that we have left, I'm going to ask you to try to limit your sharing to 2 minutes. And ask you to come up, whoever wants to take 2 minutes and share on this topic, honesty and recovery. Thank you for letting me share.
My name's Susan. I'm an alcoholic from Seattle. Thank you very much for sharing. Honesty and recovery. I was just out in the hallway and I had a friend remind me about God and how big God is, because I'm a little cleaning lady on Friday. I missed a big job by 5 minutes and I, you know, spiraled down into that place of like, oh, where is God? And I was reminded that 3 years ago when I was sober for a while and I got in a relationship that ended and I wanted to kill myself, I'd seen a guy in our home group who changed profoundly by working the steps. And that was so profound to me that I borrowed his God, got a sponsor, and started working through the steps and got to amends and reconnected with my family who I had been out of their life for 10 years. And that I had a really big God. And, you know, today, I'll end with this. Today, when I go visit my family once a month, and when my dad goes to put me on the plane, you know, I always say to him, hey, Dad, I love you. And he says, I love you too. And I'll say, hey, Dad, you going to pick me up next month? And he'll say, yeah. And I'll say, hey, Dad, what I wouldn't give, huh, for that time that was lost. And so I just have to remember, like, God is everything or nothing, and what is meant to be is, and what isn't isn't. And when I get lost, I just have to remember that moment when God was big enough to restore me to sanity. And anyway, I'm grateful to be here. Thanks.
I'm John. I'm a cross-addicted alcoholic from Kalamazoo, Michigan. This is really cool. You know, when you hear people say, I really didn't expect to be here, I really didn't expect to be here. I just want to say in 2 minutes, I had 19 years of sobriety and my life was falling apart. I was headed towards bankruptcy. I was headed towards divorce. My kids were getting out of control. I work as a project manager in construction and I had lost $250,000 on my last project. You know, so that nobody got bonuses that year. Everything was just really going to hell in a handbasket. And I was going to these meetings that most of the guys in the meetings had like 6 months of sobriety. I had 19 years, so I thought it was my responsibility to show these guys, you know, what it was like to be sober. So I always had this face on, and I wasn't being honest, you know, about what was going on in my life. I also wasn't using a sponsor. I wasn't doing the steps, you know, maybe 1, 2, and 3, but that was it. And I was being treated for depression with medication, and then my wife left. And I was left with 2 preteens to raise, and I was totally out of my element. I didn't have a clue. I didn't know which end was up. And I prayed to my higher power, and I said, please, please, guide and direct me, because I don't know where I'm going. You know, I was so scared that I was going to relapse. And, you know, their kid's mom had already left, and I thought, you know, if I get drunk, these kids have got nothing. So I prayed, and, you know, God, I ended up in Al-Anon. And when I got to Al-Anon, I knew that I was on the first step, and it wasn't no more pretending. I didn't have to be something that I wasn't because somebody else had less time in the program. I was there for day one. The neat thing about it was, because of me being an alcoholic, I was looking for the similarities, and I realized that the 12 steps were the same. So when I got to Al-Anon, I committed to working the 12 steps in order, starting with 1, and I wasn't going to move on to the next one until I got the first one down. So in the last 4 years that I've been in Al-Anon, and of course still going to AA meetings, I've worked my AA program better than ever. I've been working the steps. I got a sponsor. You know, I wrote that stuff down. And I started getting honest and started telling people, you know, where I really was. And today, most of the people in my home group will tell you that that's what they really, really like about me, is I'm very honest. Thank you.
Hi there. I'm alive today, living with a fatal disease of alcoholism, and my name is Eilish. And it's only thanks to my higher power and Alcoholics Anonymous and you people. The topic of honesty is really important to me. In recovery today, I sobered up in June of 1991, and today it's as important for me to try to be honest with myself as it was difficult when I came in. The only way I can do that today is through the help of my sponsor. Because still today, I have this amazing ability to lie to myself, particularly when it involves fear. Because my recovery depends on me continuing to change. I have to keep changing. I have to keep growing. And as somebody who has this mental illness of alcoholism, the last thing I want to do is change. I'm afraid of change. And it's only through the grace of God giving me the courage to change and the people that are in my life to support me with that change I'm able to do it. But it first starts with me being honest with myself about how I really feel. Getting underneath, you know, some of the surface things, and with the help of my sponsor, seeing the truth. Because it is so hard for me to see the truth about myself. It's easy for me to see it with other people and my sponsees. It's no problem. I got 20/20 vision, right? But myself? No way. So in my life today, I've got lots of change in my life today, and it's only through being, with the help of my sponsor, being able to be honest about this creature that my higher power created and the gifts that are inside, and also what I need, and to not settle for letting my fears run my life anymore. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Susan, and I'm an alcoholic. It's only through working the 12 steps and awesome home group, great sponsorship, that I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink since January 11th, 1995, and for that I'll be always grateful. Totally awesome to be here. I love the topic, honesty. When I first came into the rooms, I couldn't get honest. I really didn't even know if I was an alcoholic. When we went around the room and everyone introduced themselves, yes, I said, I'm an alcoholic, but I really didn't believe it, you know, and I had a problem with the honesty part, especially when it came to the fourth step, the fourth and fifth step. And the first person I had as a sponsor, I had picked her because I felt that I could manipulate her and kind of control her. And so when it came time to the fourth step, I said, hey, I got no problem with the resentments, but the other part, you know, the sex or the fear inventory, hey, we're not going to get there, you know. And I was not completely honest on that fourth step, and it almost took me out. You know, I almost went back out because of that. So I was miserable. I was miserable drinking, and now I'm miserable sober because I couldn't get honest with myself. So I got to the point where it was either, okay, you know what, I'm going to go back out drinking, hey, been there, done that, or I'm going to try something new, and I'm going to follow direction, and I'm going to do what you tell me to do. Got myself a new sponsor, then went through the big book with me page by page. When I tried to pull that same stuff with her on the fourth step and say, hey, I'm only going to do so much, she told me I needed to redo it. And I pushed that paper across the kitchen table, and I said, here it is, and she said, do it again. And I kept trying to get away with doing as minimum as possible, and I really believe that she helped save my life because she helped me to get honest with myself, and I needed that. When I had to do the fifth step with her, I was still a little unsure, you know, but she shared a lot of stuff with me, which I thought, okay, I've said some stuff to her, she said some stuff to me. If she tells anyone my stuff, I got stuff to tell about her, you know? You know, sick thinking, right? But she never said anything to anyone, and it made me trust her, made me believe in her and believe in this program. So I think honesty to me, for me anyway, was the key to actually getting involved in this program and getting better. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Annika. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Sweden. And I can't believe that I actually went up here. Thank you for your story that actually made me go up. My feelings this week, today, my feelings are really roller coaster. I'm here by myself. I'm in Toronto. I'm here due to have served as a World Service Delegate, and I have attended reunion for past delegates. And so my husband said back in Sweden, you go to Toronto, you enjoy yourself. And I really have done that. But I didn't realize the roller coaster feeling that I have now. I came in on Monday, and today I am crying, I am laughing, I'm strolling around, I'm attending meetings, and I called my family several times. I just had the need to talk to them. I want to share how I took the first step, and that was before I knew anything about AA. After 5 years of heavy drinking, my personal bottom, 5 years, hurting my family, hurting my friends, hurting work, and not the hurting myself, everyone had enough. They asked me if I had a drinking problem, and I got so upset, so I had to go out and buy myself a bottle of brandy at work, and that was that. I don't remember a thing after that. I was sent to our health care from my office. I was a banker, and I was a nice girl who was not supposed to drink, smoke, or swear, but I did everything. I came to work the day after. I don't know how. Probably my husband pulled me in a plastic bag and brought me there. They put me up in a restroom for 5 hours, and that was the first time for 5 years that I couldn't have anything to drink, any pills, nothing. They checked me up once in a while so I won't die. After that, they took me to this health care. And coming there, I couldn't walk, I couldn't sit, I couldn't stand, I couldn't lie down. I saw that man and I said, please, I'm an alcoholic. Help me, please, dear, help me now. Not in an hour, not tomorrow, now. And he said to me, you have just made the most important decision in your life. You asked for help. I came to detox. I had this letter, you know, where they probably stated she's a drunk. And this male nurse came, and I gave him the paper, and he said, you are in the wrong building, it's there. And it was 200 meters. And that red building, I will never forget that. And I said, I can't walk, please help me. It's that building, you walk. And I went those 200 meters, telling myself, one step, another step. And I said it aloud, another step, and another step. And finally I reached the building, got into the elevator, they opened the door, and there was another nurse, and she just embraced me and said, do you want to lie down? I came into detox, and that was the first time I got to know alcoholics. And there were the guys sitting, coming in from the gutter to dry out. And they were there for me in detox, lighting my cigarette, holding my cup of coffee, comfort me when I was crying. And I identified with those people. And then I came to AA, and in AA, I realized I'm home. Finally, I am somebody. I am Annika, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you all for being here for me.
We're obviously not going to have time for all of the speakers. We can go only till 5 o'clock precisely because of the taping. So just so that we know, we'll get in as many as we can.
Hi, my name's Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Denver, Colorado. And just very quickly, I wanted to share something that was shared with me. When I was on my 6th and 7th step, and it had come through on my 4th step over and over and over, this issue of dishonesty, manipulation by dishonesty and omission of the truth, just like everything in my character defects, when I got to 6 and 7, I had to say, God, show me how to do this differently, because what I know how to do is lie. And usually what happens when I ask God to show me how to do things differently when I'm in 6 and 7, I either see somebody do it, like you said, showing by example, or something shared at a meeting, and I'm given direction. And one of the things that was shared at a meeting at this time in my life that I've held on to very tightly, because it's proven to be true, is that someone shared, he said that, honesty without compassion is brutality. Compassion without honesty is hypocrisy. And honesty with compassion is a gift of love. And that has really helped me, because when I have to face a situation where I have to be honest and I don't know how to do that, I just ask for God to show me how to be honest and compassionate. That's all I got. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Julianne from Whistler, British Columbia. Today I have 4 days. Because of your honesty, I just took the first step, and I'm home. Thank you.
My name is Kirk. I'm an alcoholic from Sarah, Pennsylvania. Because I've embraced and accepted my disease of alcoholism and chemical dependency, today I know the most dishonest thing I could do would be to pick up a drink or a drug. I can't be honest and drink, and I certainly can't drink and be honest. That's the most important thing I can do today, but I'm here so that I can enjoy doing that. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Dave, and I'm an alcoholic from Southern California. Popeye was the most honest man I ever knew. As he said, I am what I am. And that's what I've learned about honesty in AA. I am what I am, no more, no less. Because when I was out there drinking, I was always more than or less than I ever was. And by finding out what I am and being able to live with it, I've been sober since August 3rd, 1979. Thank you.
I don't know about you, but it's been a wonderful meeting for me. And for all who would care to join, let's close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer.